This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
Now, log on to any gay dating app and you're bound to see just how racist our community can be to each other. In fact, you don't even need to go online, pop into a pub that caters for a particular type of gay, and you'll mainly see people who almost look the same. In fact, I'll tell you a bit of a story. I went to a party last year with an Asian guy I was dating, and we walked in and he was self-conscious as he was about, you know, maybe one in four Asian guys there out of probably 500 men. We ended up leaving as he felt like he wasn't welcome in such a highly sexualized environment. So, and inside my mind, I was furious. I was so angry with our community, you know, who's been subjected to all sorts of prejudice and bullying, that we made someone feel so undesirable that they felt that they had to leave. And to be honest with you, he was probably the best looking guy there out of all 500 of us. So there's no denying that there is sexual racism towards Asian men in the gay community, and we need to talk about it. And Edison Chen has written an article in the Star Observer. You might have seen it, but it's really good. And it's talking about the role of the media in how we see Asian men. Edison, welcome to Joy Drive.
My gosh, what a controversial and great welcome for me.
We don't shy away from the hard topics here on Joy Drive, as much as we like to have fun as well. But I was shocked to read in your article that Asian men are the least desirable race when it comes to dating. When was this particular study done, and are things slowly improving?
So this was an OkCupid study in 2014. So it was done a while back, but I remember reading it and it kind of affirms, you know, my experiences. So Asian men and black women on their dating site were the least responded to demographics. And so that was really interesting. But I don't know if there's any more recent studies to test, you know, what the general lay of the land is. But I personally think it's improving just by the fact that things are getting better in general. So
okay, what role? And you talk about this a bit in your article, but what role has, I suppose, the media or the lack of Asian representation in media played in shaping the gay community's attitude towards Asian men?
Well, I think media representation bleeds into real life. It becomes part of our truth and what we believe is reality. So let's start with that. Media representation for, let's say, Asian men in particular has been bombarded with a lot of negative stereotypes, or stereotypes that don't often represent us in ways that are romantic or in a, like, role that is in a lead romance role or a sexual kind of desirable role. It's always, or used to be, like either the nerd or let's say like a karate thing. So these kind of perceptions, I think, get subconsciously ingested in the populace, and we get an idea of what a race or a certain person is. And so without kind of diversifying or opening our minds up to what an Asian person is, we just automatically assume we know somebody based on what they look like. And so, in conclusion, we get the sense that Asian people aren't kind of in those roles in which we want to see a future as, say, boyfriends or husbands. So it's not just queer community, but in large, in Western society, it's kind of consistent.
And I suppose also being here in a predominantly white society, does that also overlay another complexity to it as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, predominantly white means that white is the default. And so when you look at a white person, you want to see or get to know the personality more, and you attribute different things to who they are. But when you see someone of a minority status, you kind of go, they're Asian or they're whatever minority status they are, and you just automatically assume these things. So white as a default is one thing. And then just majority-wise, as white people, you know, beauty standards and status, there's automatically that privilege. And so I guess in terms of representation and who is doing the representing, it's not often a thing for people in power and people behind the screen to necessarily be aware of the struggles of other people if they're white, let's say. And so it's kind of a thing in which, yeah, it's hard to have these conversations because there's not a lot of platforms to have them or to discuss them, because the majority voices can be quite dismissive because it's often written off as just a preference, for example.
I looked at a queer holiday ad recently, and on the front page there's all these white buffed men. And I suppose, why are some still not embracing that, you know, the diversity, I suppose, that accurately reflects our community? Not everyone is a buffed white man.
I mean, I think a lot of this boils down to people in power and commercialization and what sells. It's like a catch-22, right? So what's popular right now and what's hot is buff white men. And nobody in power is conscious or wants to take the risk. Okay, well, that's a general statement, but it's harder to take a risk in featuring things that are going to sell less. So it's up to us as a community and also us, you know, people to have these conversations and raise our voice and say, hang on, you know, we want to see more diversity because that's what we want. And but if that's not what we want, people aren't going to give it to us. Do you know what I mean? So we really need to make the conscious effort as a whole scene or a whole queer community to talk about these topics and to raise awareness and to reach the people who are making these decisions that there should be more diversity and more representation in the media that is inclusive.
We're chatting with Edison Chen, who has written an article in the latest version of Star Observer, which you can catch, about Asian representation in the media. Now, what if someone listening, Edison, says, well, you know what, I'm just not attracted to Asian men? It's not about forcing people to be attracted to certain people, is it?
No, and I want to say that shame as a tactic is not something that I want to do. It's not something that I think is effective or good for conversation. No one's trying to shame you for your preferences. It's just we're analyzing the structural elements that go into why these circumstances exist, why I feel like I'm not desirable, why I feel like Asian men on a whole have conversations about why they're not desirable. Or why they feel like they're not welcome in queer spaces. So it's more about that. I think for people who feel like they're not attracted to anybody, I would just welcome introspection and a bit of awareness in that something that you think is so instinctual as attraction is something that is influenceable and has been influenced by your lived experience and by what you've been fed by the media or your environment. And not saying this is for everybody, because some people have, I'm sure, like, all sorts of preferences, but really just question how you feel if that, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that in a white-dominated society with white-dominated media, that the majority preference goes to white buff men. So I think for me, saying it's just a preference, that's how I feel, is a bit of an easy way out. Nobody wants to put in the work and go, okay, wait a minute, maybe there is something to structural kind of societal influences and a result how a lot of people in our culture feel about certain things. So, I mean, it's not necessarily like an exercise people have to take, because at the end of the day, depending on how it benefits you is, I think, something to consider. But I think if you care about people, it's good to have these conversations and introspective thoughts.
I agree with you. Let's talk about RuPaul's Drag Race season 15. What was so significant about that in terms of changing people's attitudes towards Asian men?
Look, I was so surprised because they have something called like Trait of the Season or like the attractive guy out of drag, and the two ones that people were talking about often were the Asian ones. And so it was such a weird headspace for me because I'm so used to people just dismissing Asian guys as hot or desirable. And so I don't know if it's like a generational thing. I don't know if things have been changing for the better, and that's what I hope it is. But whenever people kind of go, oh, this person is attractive of a particular race, a lot of the times you hear, but I'm not usually into them for some reason. So for people to so frankly go, I find Anitra hot or I find Aura hot, was very welcoming. And RuPaul's Drag Race is like a fundamental type of queer culture. Like it's so popular, it's so it bleeds into a lot of queer circles and subcultures. So to have that representation and to have those conversations and to have people, I think, not grimacing at those conversations is really welcoming and it feels good. So it's a positive change in my head. It's like a barometer of how things are changing. So yeah, I don't know. It's just a good moment in time.
Susie Rong joins us every Tuesday from Sydney, and last year we reviewed Fire Island, and I've got to admit, Edison, I was really hesitant to watch it at first. I thought, oh, this is going to be the most superficial gay movie I've ever seen, and then I watched it, and of course, Joel Kim Booster and Bowen Yang were outstanding in their performances. How do movies like this change attitudes within the gay community?
Well, I think any piece of media that has positive representation is a small step in changing attitudes in the community. So Fire Island, I think, was, I don't know historically, but it's definitely one of the first queer Asian pieces of media from a Western country that I've seen. And there's not a lot of movies or shows that really tackle things about the hierarchical nature of queer desirability in party scenes or whatever. So to see a bunch of, let's say, POCs and femme people who, you know, these types of people aren't usually the poster boys for magazines, and to listen and watch their struggles, obviously it opens up empathy, opens up, for me and other Asian people, just validation for what we're feeling. We don't feel like we're so alone, or what we're going through is just in our heads. And to see like positive, for Joel, his character, Asian to Asian queer romance is revolutionary as well, because there's so many stories where you might have one Asian love interest or one Asian lead, but to have several is quite significant. There was also that scene about fetishization with the Rice Queen and Bowen Yang's character, and it really kind of was a moment in which I think a lot of people could relate to, because you get so down on yourself because you don't feel attractive because, you know, of what your experience is, that you think to feel any sort of affection or love, you might have to cater yourself to people who might fetishize you, but it's also dehumanizing. So to watch Bowen's character get to that point, it was just, you know, things that may cross our minds in the Asian queer community. So I hope it does open up empathy, but also opens up, you know, more opportunities for stories to be told of cultures that don't often get to be told.
Edison, great to chat with you. Thanks for joining us on Drive today.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes.
Thank you. And you can catch Edison's article in the Star Observer all about queer Asian representation getting better in the media. I hope it is anyway. You enjoy Drive.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.